And again, you've got all the probiotic benefits in the kombucha as well. So you drink stuff that tastes absolutely amazing and you feel really smug knowing that it's doing you so much good as well. But again, as I say, I'm a science geek. So I mean, for me, in my house, in my kitchen, it's like there's signs of stuff bubbling everywhere. I've got sourdough starters, I've got dairy kefir, I've got soya kefir, I've got all my kombuchas, I've got cupboards full of fermenting veggies.
My name is Paul Harvey, and this is Life, Passion and Business. We're about helping you explore, finding your passion for life and the work that you do. But it's so much more than that. It's about finding clues to the big life questions. What does it mean to be successful? What is the meaning of life? If you're looking for more, then join me on this journey, where together we will discover through interviews, tools and tips, how to live life full of meaning, passion and purpose. So we can all relate to food. It is an emotive subject and stirs memories, both good and sometimes not so good. Who remembers dreadful dinner dates or childhood associations? I have a horror story around sprouts that stopped me eating them for years. But on the most part, some of my best memories with friends, lovers or family are related to food and drink. Yes, I am a foodie. Cooking and sharing food is my thing. Food is never far from my mind. I know what I'll be cooking on most days and I love to experiment. So when I first met Janice Klein, it was with some excitement. Janice is a fermented food specialist. And while most of us know of our fermented drinks and our fermented flour, bread, there's a whole world of fermentation that is both fun and it has enormous benefits to our health. I first met Janet in the Change Your World coaching group. Now, Facebook groups have engagement and it's often a bit variable, but this week, Janice had people sharing photos of food, exploring all sorts of new possibilities. I was hooked and I could see a whole new area of taste and flavour and possibility opening up before me. So Janice started her career as a food research scientist. She got her degree and went on to study for a PhD project in the whiskey industry, working on the aging process using different types of oak barrels. The work was interesting, however, she fell pregnant during that time and so she left the PhD to have her first child. And four girls later, she had become an obsessive food fermenter, food grower, educator and teacher of healthy choices. This conversation is her journey through sourdough, kombucha, kefir, kimchi, kraut and fermented veggies. She's as passionate to share her knowledge about the magical world of microbes and gut health. Did you know that 80% of our immune system starts in the gut? Janice is the founder of the Nourish by Nature blog that is dedicated, some may obsessed, with addressing the fast food convenience and throwaway society. She determined to address today's chronic health issues by introducing people to the health-affirming and delicious world of fermented food and drinks. For her, it's about informing, supporting, and enabling people of all ages and backgrounds to enjoy better health through making better, informed food choices, getting back into their kitchens and bringing the joy and pleasure back into cooking and the eating of real food. I hope you enjoy this conversation as much as I did with Janice Klein. So do check out the links in the show notes for her celebration cookbook, and it is spot on for this festive season. Welcome to Life, Passion and Business. Another day, another podcast, and today I am so excited to be with Janice Klein. Now, I've known Janice for a while because I was in a coaching group with her, and I tell you what, I won't spoil the surprise. This is going to be fantastic. So Janice is a fermentation expert. Make of that what you will. It's not what you think. Janice, welcome to the program. Thank you so much for being here today.
Oh, good morning, Paul. Thanks so much for inviting me. Great to chat to you.
It's going to be great because I know you're a fermentation expert. I have seen, but it's all about food. This is kombucha. This is about health and living well through the stomach.
Yeah, good way of putting it.
So, Janice, look, okay, you didn't start out in the world of fermentation. What was the story? This is life, passion, and business. You're clearly passionate about the food and things that you create. Where did it all begin?
Well, I actually started out as a food scientist. I worked in research in food science for a period of about 9, 10 years. I've always been interested in food and health and well-being. But then I was actually doing a PhD in maturation of Scottish whisky, and I discovered I was expecting my first daughter. So I decided to chuck the PhD and just throw myself full on into being a mum. A couple of years later, another daughter came along, and then I just decided I'm a very old-fashioned girl at heart. I just wanted to stay at home and look after the girls. So I took a career break, and to be honest, didn't really quite go back. I was having too much fun. I then had another two girls, so I've got four girls. And then I did various other things, and then I studied microbiotics in 2011, which really was very interesting. I mean, most people think of Gwyneth Paltrow when you think of microbiotics. Microbiotics means big life, and it's all about balance, and it's a lot of Chinese sort of medicine, whatever in it as well, but it's predominantly about food, and it's about diet, and it's how diet affects our health. And to be honest, I hadn't really thought about it so much in those terms. I mean, I've always enjoyed good food and making food myself, and I was aware that what we actually does create our health, but the microbiotic thing brought the whole thing into a much higher sort of significance for me. Started off fermenting and making sauerkraut, which wasn't great, I have to say. The microbiotic sauerkraut wasn't great, and I've
So
since made I make
let's
potatoes
get to
now.
that a bit, because I want to unpack some of you kind of went over. I think you just covered like 30 years very, very quickly. So let's go back to the very beginning. And when you said you were a research scientist and you were studying aging of Scottish whiskey, was that your first initial involvement in fermentation?
Well, yeah, I guess you could say it was, although it wasn't so much in the practical side. I was doing a lot of the sensory work. So I was a sensory analyst. So I was doing, we had, it was a project that worked two sides. We had a guy who was doing all the chemical analysis of all the flavor compounds in the whiskey, and I was doing the sensory stuff. So I set up panels to get people to nose the, we didn't taste them, obviously. I would have ended up, but some of them were awful because we started off with totally immature whiskey and took it through. We were looking actually at using different casks for maturing the whiskey. Traditionally, it was used sherry casks, but we were doing a wee experiment where we'd actually charred new casks, and we were going to age the whiskey and see, check the flavor profile through a normal maturation, and just to see, if there was, if it was comparable at all. It wasn't really, there were similarities, but there wasn't. So that's what my PhD was actually in. I was in it, as I say, in the first year of it, but I had worked in all sorts of other foods as well. But yeah, I guess that was the first one in
So it
fermentation.
sounds like food has always been something you worked in. You were always involved in food.
Well, I worked with Warburton's, the bread people, as well for a 2-year project. So that's how I knew quite a lot about bread. Now I make sourdough, so I know about, a lot about that. My first project was actually working with rice. And we were looking at a new rice milling process. So I had a whole load of Malaysian students that came down. They were my panel of rice tasters. And the lab was full of beakers. We had, obviously, everything has to be totally standardized. I had all my rice cookers, and it was fun. It actually was fun. I mean, from a sciencey point of view, a lot of the people that I worked with were real science boffins. I mean, they didn't relate very well with people. My thing was actually, I love doing all the people stuff. So they're getting people to come down to, to taste all the things and to rope people in and to enthuse people about what you were doing. That was actually what I really enjoyed doing.
So it sounds like
Whereas,
even though you were doing a science experiment and you're working from a scientist's perspective, you were still preparing food on some level.
yeah, well, I was actually, but again, I did a master's in analytical biochemistry. So I started off, I was doing a lot of the chemical testing of things, but then I discovered that I was more interested in the sensory side. So any food stuff that you're going to be doing any tests on, ultimately it has to be acceptable to the end user, or what is the point? You can measure as many things as you like, but if people think, oh, well, actually, I don't want to buy that. I worked also with Beechams and Ribena for a couple of years. That was really interesting as well, because we discovered that Ribena, people actually didn't relate Ribena to blackcurrant. Ribena was known as a separate thing. Everyone recognised Ribena. It was quite bizarre because if you look at most blackcurrant drinks, a lot of them are like really quite tart, really quite unusual. Then you get the really sweetened ones. So Ribena was actually known as a separate thing. So again, as I say, to me, that was really interesting. There's a lot of flavour profiling, a lot of statistics, a lot of graphs and, you know, positioning products and different things. But it was fun. It really was fun. And as I say, from a science point of view, I was one of the few that actually enjoyed communicating with people and getting people to come down. The rest of them are all, you know, too much boffins in their head doing all the research papers and stuff. But I enjoyed all the practical side of it.
So is that, I mean, that sounds like food's always been a passion for you. Did that come from an early age? Did that come from a family thing?
Yeah, well, I mean, I came from, my mum stayed at home and looked after us, family of three. And my mum obviously came from a working class background, didn't really have very much money, but my mum, you know, made the most of everything, you know, that she had. I mean, people grew things though in those days. Everyone grew some stuff. Everyone ate seasonally. Nobody had fridges, nobody had money to go and stock up, you know, so we used to just eat what was in season, which is actually the right way to eat. I lived in Wishaw, which was near the Clyde Valley. So in the summer, we used to go and pick our own raspberries and strawberries, and they were the most wonderful, wonderful things. But you only got them when they were in season, you know, and it's the same with salad. You only eat salad in the summer. You know, and then, but now what happens is people eat the same stuff all year round, and it's not the same nutritional value at all, nor is it the same flavour, because everything has been standardised, and a lot of people, they don't, you know, choose things by flavour, they go with what things look like. So a lot of the stuff you get, people will go, oh, I'm going to have that big shiny red apple, you get it, and it tastes of nothing, so... I'd rather go back to the way that we were when things were more natural, Paul. So I'm all about natural. And as I said, I really am very old-fashioned. So my mum stayed at home, looked after us. She baked, she cooked. So I grew up doing all that kind of stuff. And when I had my own girls, I was lucky enough that I was able to take a break and just look after them. And I had the best time. Mm-hmm. I love gardening. My first degree is agricultural chemistry. I love gardening and soil. And I was actually on the Beechgrove Garden many years ago, twice. So that was quite exciting. But I just like, you know, the way when life was simpler, we've got overcomplicated everything. And I don't like the way that life is going at all at the moment. So I just hark back to simpler times where, you know, people knew how to cook, because so many people now have no idea how to cook anything at all. And a lot of people also don't link what they eat and what their lifestyle is with their health. And that's my big thing. And really, as I say, is look at our health these days. It's just a disaster.
So that's really become your passion thing. You, as you said, you studied macrobiotics.
Yeah.
And that, what caught your attention in that? Why were you, so what was so fascinating by that?
Well, it was actually a good friend of mine who was out in Portugal. She was a macrobiotic expert, her and her husband, and they came back to Scotland. And it was just an opportunity, another business venture that I had was coming to an end. And I thought, perfect timing. You know, it was one of these things, thought I'll do that. I didn't really understand the whole ins and outs of it, but I wanted to support her. So I signed up for the course. And actually, as I say, actually, I really enjoyed it, but I also discovered it was too narrow a way to live, and I don't like people telling me how to live my life.
Yeah, because there's no meat in a macrobiotic diet.
There's no meat. Well, I personally don't eat meat, but again, as I say, I think life and food in particular, it's not up to someone else to tell us how to eat. There is no one way of eating that suits everyone. And there is so much guilt and fear around food. Oh, don't eat this, you can't eat that. What I try and do is to look at all the amazing stuff you can eat, which just happens to be plant-based. I don't eat meat personally now. I haven't eaten meat for about 10 years. That's my personal choice. But I mean, I love animals and I don't want to eat them. I don't miss meat because I eat lots of other things. But anyways, I say the whole macrobiotic course was very interesting because it started me on the journey of, you know, thinking, okay, eat their sauerkraut. Okay, it doesn't taste great, but it has benefits for your health. And then I discovered kombucha, which it was actually, I discovered an article, it was Ronald Reagan at the time, who had stomach cancer, and he had attributed drinking kombucha to his recovery from stomach cancer. Now, whether or not it did, well, but that's what piqued my interest. I thought, oh, that sounds interesting, but this was 10 years ago before anyone really knew what kombucha was. But now there's a massive interest now in that kimchi, kombucha, kefir, a lot of people now are aware of it because, you know, there's a heck of a lot of research being done. And all of these foods are essentially living foods. They are probiotic foods. They are foods that contain, you know, live bacteria that can really benefit our health. Mm-hmm. And they taste absolutely amazing. And when you learn how to make them yourself, they're incredibly cheap to make. And it's just fantastic fun. It's like having a whole load of wee living pets. So as I say, I discovered kombucha and then I bought some because you couldn't buy it. Well, it was very difficult to find it then. And it was nearly £5 for a bottle. I remember ordering it and I got it. And kombucha is like a fermented green tea. So it's a wee bit of an acquired taste. And I had a glass and I thought, oh, that's a bit strange. Didn't know if I liked it or not. So I put it in the fridge. And every time I went past the fridge, I had to open the fridge and have another glass. There was something in it that my body was absolutely craving. And before I knew it, I had drank the whole bottle, which I would not recommend anyone to do because kombucha is a powerful, powerful drink. It's a living drink. It's very detoxifying. I mean, I didn't have any side effects from drinking it. I just couldn't stop drinking it. I couldn't get enough of it. So I decided it was far too expensive. So I started brewing my own about 10 years ago. As I say, I make coffee kombucha, all sorts of different drinks, and I have it all the time now. I make coffee kombucha cocktails, and I do water kefir. I discovered milk kefir as well, so I do soya kefir, milk kefir. I use it for my skin. So it's just been a very interesting journey, Paul, and one that I am absolutely fascinated in. It's the magical world of microbes, which essentially what they do is they just transform foods and drinks into a much more healthy version and a living version, you know, of that food or that drink. Mm. And again, these days there's so much interest in gut health. That's where everything comes from.
I mean, my wife was diagnosed with Parkinson's. Well, we knew probably it was Parkinson's last year, but the full diagnosis came for this year. And all the research I've been doing on Parkinson's this year all points to gut problems.
Yeah. The thing is, Paul, it doesn't actually matter where you're at with your health. It all comes back to your gut, whether it's skin health, whether it's your mental health, whether it's digestive issues, whether it's chronic disease of any kind, Alzheimer's, anything, it all comes back to your gut because 80% of your immune system is in your gut. Your gut's all neurotransmitters are produced in your gut. Everything happens and it's like your gut's your second brain. And it used to be thought that it was your brain telling your gut what to do. It's the other way around.
Some say that we think we're a sentient being, but actually we're just a container for the real colony that lives inside us.
Yes, that is right. We're actually more bacterial than we are human. But you know, the bacterial cells in our body outweigh the human ones by 10-1. So yeah, we totally are. And again, what we have done is we're germ phobic. We're like, let's kill all the bacteria, which is a really bad idea.
That does concern me, actually. The use of all this anti-bac gel and sprays everywhere, yeah. It does make me wonder, are we breeding an next superbug? But
yes, absolutely. Yeah. And again, I don't use anti-bac thing. I use natural like kombucha for cleaning and whatever, because what those things do is kill off bad bacteria but keep the good ones. What we're doing with the kills 99.9% of bacteria, we're destroying all the bacteria. We have bacteria on our skin, every surface of our body, and they're there for a purpose to protect us and to keep us well. And okay, occasionally you'll get, you know, the bad ones creep in. They're generally when you don't have enough of the good ones. And people that are, you know, and kids, you know, using these anti-bac gels all the time, they're actually going to be decreasing their own immunity. And as you say, we're going to end up with superbugs. There already are bacteria that we have no antibiotics for, and there are going to be more of them. Because as I say, we're destroying all the good ones that would protect us. And the point of it is as well, a lot of the good bacteria actually kill the bad ones.
But before antibiotics, people used to use bacterial phage, didn't they, or something?
But again, soap and water, Paul. It must be me going back to being old-fashioned. Good old-fashioned soap and water works exactly the same, but it doesn't kill off all the protective bacteria on your skin. Another story is I've got incredibly sensitive skin. I have very good health. I really, touch wood, have no health issues, but I don't take it for granted. I don't just presume, oh, I'm just lucky, I'm really healthy, because I take steps every day to ensure that my health, you know, stays as good as it can.
Yeah.
And I have issues with my skin. I've got incredibly sensitive skin. I can't use products with perfume or whatever. So I just don't. I mean, I can't use hair dye, so I have grey hair. It's like, so what? I'm aging. It doesn't matter.
No.
And so many people are just hoodwinked into thinking that they need to use all these products that, you know, that ultimately are going to damage their health in the long term.
There's a guy who's developed, I think, a probiotic body wash and shampoo.
Yeah,
contains no soap, and the whole idea of it is you just wash yourself down in this stuff. And and what it was about, he stopped washing or something, for some reason I can't remember the reason, but this stuff stops. He doesn't produce any BO because he's got a natural balance of bacteria in his body.
Yes, that's interesting, because I use kombucha actually as a deodorant. What that does, or a part of a SCOBY, which is what you use to make kombucha, they're incredible things because they are antibacterial, antimicrobial, antifungal. They do so many things, but they're acidic, they're the same pH as your skin, so they don't strip all the natural oils off your skin. So I use like SCOBY face mask. I use all probiotic skincare. This is the next big thing, but I've been doing it for years. I use kefir for my skin. I use whey for my hair. I use SCOBYs for my skin. Honestly, my skin's never been better. And I use all probiotics. So again, what I am doing is I'm supporting the mantle, the acid mantle of my skin, and I'm not damaging it. Mm-hmm. And what I'm doing is I'm supporting it. But again, this is going to be the next big thing. Oh yeah, buy probiotic skincare. As I say, if you make kombucha, you will have SCOBYs, which is a symbiotic culture of bacteria and yeast. It's a big blob. It looks a bit like a...
Yeah, yeah. Like a well, I had one, but I killed it, unfortunately.
Oh, well, but I mean, again, they are like wee pets. You do need to look after them. Mine all have names, but I used to have so many because I used to run a lot of workshops on, you know, fermented drinks and stuff. And I must have had about 10 different SCOBYs at one point, all fermenting different things, all with names. So it just became a wee bit too much. So I've had to pare it back a wee bit. So I'll get rid of Tashi, my Tibetan SCOBY, because I wasn't particularly keen on that kombucha. But I've got a coffee kombucha. I do my green tea one. I've got...
So what are the names of your kombuchas then, of your SCOBYs?
Well, I used to have... Well, Tashi was my Tibetan SCOBY. I've got Rosie, who is my hibiscus SCOBY, who's a lovely rosy pink colour. I've got Jamie, who was my original Scottish SCOBY. That's my green tea one. I've got Carmen, the coffee SCOBY. I've got Lily, the June SCOBY. I've got many. And I've got Wee Hempy. He was my recent one. Wee Hempy, the hemp SCOBY, because I make kombucha with the hemp tea, you know, all the CBD stuff.
Yeah,
it's
yeah,
really
yeah.
It's incredible, but hemp kombucha actually tastes amazing. And I buy the tea bags from Holden Barrett, and I just make up the hemp tea and I put a SCOBY in and just ferment it for about 4 or 5 days. It's absolutely delicious.
Oh gosh, you and yeah. I could get geeked out on this. I need to be really careful.
It's so much fun, and what I've made so many different things. I've also just put SCOBYs into, like, I love foraging as well. So I got a load of elderflowers, and I made an elderflower syrup, sweetened it, and I just put a SCOBY in the with the syrup, so there was no tea involved in it at all, and it made the most intensely fantastic elderflower kombucha. And what I did with that is I froze it in ice cube trays, and then I use it to flavour my green tea kombucha during the year. If I just fancy some elderflower, a hit of elderflower. And again, you've got all the probiotic benefits in the kombucha as well. So you drink stuff that tastes absolutely amazing, and you feel really smug knowing that it's doing you so much good as well. But again, as I say, I'm a science geek. So, I mean, for me, in my house and my kitchen's like, there's signs of stuff bubbling everywhere. I've got sourdough starters. I've got dairy kefir. I've got soya kefir. I've got all my kombuchas. I've got cupboards full of fermenting veggies. Anyway, it's fantastic fun, and I get so excited about it because these foods are just incredible, and they're not new, they're nothing new, they've been around for hundreds of years, keeping people well. And again, in the meantime, what we eat, most of the food we eat actually isn't even real food at all. It's so full of chemicals, it's been processed.
Well, I guess if you've got to feed a lot of people, you've got to automate these processes. And I think it would be quite difficult to do what you do on a commercial basis. Because I've tasted commercial kombucha, and it tends to be a bit...
It's nowhere near the same, Paul, honestly. But that's
Well, they've killed it, haven't they? What they do is they create this, and then they kill everything in it to make it pasteurize it, to make it safe.
yes, that's exactly the point. And again, people go and buy jars of sauerkraut from the supermarket shelf, thinking that they're going to, it's probiotic and they're going to do themselves a lot of good. And most of the, if it's not in the chiller section and if it's not raw and organic, it doesn't have any live bacteria in it. So if you buy a big jar of sauerkraut, okay, it'll taste good. It's got fiber in it and it's got other stuff, but it has no live bacteria. And as you say, what we do, and this is the beauty of fermentation in the world of microbes. This is the healthiest way to preserve food. That's traditionally what it was for. It was to preserve, dairy. It was to preserve vegetables to see people through, the winter or when food was scarce. And it is the healthiest way to preserve anything. And it's the only way of taking something and preserving it. And you end up with something that is better than you started with. What do we
I
do?
agree
We
with
take.
that, because actually, so I don't like radishes at all. I think they're the devil's food. And yet I was in the summer, you suggested we make spicy radish bombs.
Oh, the radish bombs.
And I made some, and they are excellent, I have to say. They're not radishes anymore. They are something else.
No, they're fab. Do you like Brussels sprouts? I tell you, fermented Brussels sprouts, that's quite a thing. It's like I made them last year and I made them smoky. I put chili and some smoked
So
salt
how long do
and
they
some
take to make
shallot.
these things? Are they really quick?
Well, only about 10 days.
Okay, so I've got enough time to make some before Christmas then.
Absolutely. And honestly, they're so delicious. I mean, my husband hates Brussels sprouts. He hates them. But anyway, he doesn't like the fermented ones. But I made them and I thought, do you know what? They're actually quite delicious. Slice them up and add them to your salads and oh, make potato salad with your sliced fermented sprout. They're so nice. And again, all you need is a glass jar and some salt. So it's not that you have to go and spend a load of money buying all sorts of fancy equipment. You really don't. So that's my passion, is to try and explain, show people how simple it is to actually make these fantastic life-affirming living foods at home.
You've created a business around this, haven't you? Is it a
Yes.
what is it that you bring to people? How does it work? What do you do?
Well, what I was doing before the whole COVID thing, I started off after I did the macrobiotic, I started off a blog and it was really just to share recipes and plant-based food. And then I started, as I said, doing more of all the fermented stuff. And then I started doing Instagram and that just became a thing. I was so enthused by the whole thing. I just couldn't get enough of fermenting everything. So pretty much everything I do is probiotic or prebiotic. And I started running workshops. Just to share with people, how simple it is to, and more to the point as well, was to let people try how amazing these foods actually taste. Because the thing is, if people are scared of bacteria, we've discussed that already. So if you think, oh, I'm fermenting something at home, people have no idea what it tastes like, what it's supposed to taste like. Have they done it right? Have they done it wrong? And there's that fear around it. And also, we
Well,
tend to go
we've been told
between.
if it's moldy, it's moldy. It needs to be chucked out, haven't we? We've been
Yeah,
told
I know.
that's what we've been instructed, that things have
Well,
sell-by
okay.
dates, and
Well, okay, I wouldn't eat food that was moldy particularly, but I'm making tempeh at the moment, which is made with a mold, whereas most of the things I do is bacteria that are doing the fermentation. But a tempeh, you need a tempeh starter. It's a fermented soy bean, but it's actually a mold that you use. But again, that's how cheese, moldy cheese, but these things, moldy, if you have cheese that's made, and it's fermented properly and it's not pasteurized, that is probiotic because
Miso
that's
is the
still
same,
going
isn't
to
it? I
have.
mean, miso is a well long process. It's almost like 18-month process or something, like
Yeah,
lots of
absolutely. I
pounding
mean,
and
these.
then wrapping and all that. Amazing.
Well,
I
there is
watched
a
someone.
lot of processes.
Yeah, I watched someone make making soy sauce. Sort of making these bricks of soya, letting them to go moldy in the
I
side
know.
there for months, and then.
I know.
Oh gosh, what a journey. And then that with like then you end up with a bottle of soy sauce about this sauce, about
Yeah,
like
well.
about the size of my fist.
Well, I wouldn't have the patience for that, to be honest, Paul. So the longest I've ever fermented anything is I had a big crock of sauerkraut and I fermented it for 6 months just to see what it takes. But it was too sour and it was too mushy, so I didn't really like it. So again, you know, that's the other thing, is being able to show people things and let them try things at different stages. Because again, there's like no right or wrong when you ferment things. Mm-hmm. You're working with living organisms that are affected by the temperature, by the quality of the stuff that you're using. So it's not like a recipe and I say to you, oh, it's fine, ferment it for exactly 5 days and that will be right. It's a personal thing.
You know, I had a German friend years ago. I mean, he was talking, you know, wartime. I mean, his family made sauerkraut in the garden. They had a bin that was sunk into the ground, and literally every year there was a tradition where they would cut up cabbage and chuck it in the bin.
Yeah, but that's wonderful, because again, as I say, I mean, traditionally, again, people used to do it in their big cold cellars and big barrels, because that's what sustained them through the winter.
That's right. They had one, they started, and then they did another one the next year. They just went out to the garden and got a pile out, and that was it. It was in this thing in the garden.
That's fantastic. I'd be a bit worried that worms and things get in it, but anyway, I'm sure if it was in a big container, it'd be okay.
I'm sure they had it worked out, but you know, it's like, I guess it had to live outside. They didn't have anywhere to keep it inside, I guess, and keep it cold.
Yeah, but again, as I say, there's nothing wrong with doing that, because not everybody has. I mean, I've got a fridge full of ferments. I mean, I've got a separate fridge for all my fermented stuff. I mean, I'm totally obsessed by it, I wouldn't expect, but the problem is that it is very addictive. So once people used to start coming to one workshop, say they would come to fermenting veggies, they would then want to come to a kombucha workshop, then they would want to come to a sourdough workshop, and then they would want to come to the probiotic skincare one, because it's that, it gets you quite excited and enthused.
What happened? I mean, what kind of things have happened to people since they started using these things? Have you any stories of that sort of stuff?
Yeah, incredible stories. Yeah, people with gut issues, people with heartburn, indigestion, people with skin issues, people with chronic fatigue, people, really anything, Paul, to be honest. And again, this is my thing that I say to people all the time. It doesn't matter where you're at with your health, you can always improve it. Mm. And again, you know, don't just believe if you're given a diagnosis and told, oh, there's nothing you can do. That is not true at all. Because again, the majority of your health is coming from your gut. Your gut is your gut microbes in your gut. There's trillions of them. They only work on your behalf if you feed them. You need to be eating fiber and lots of different types of fiber. And for your gut, it's all about diversity. It's not about, oh, I eat five a day and I eat the same five every week. Yeah, it's not about that. And what they're discovering now is there's more and more and more research about the gut, is that they all prefer slightly different. There are trillions of these bacteria. They do all sorts of wonderful things to keep as well. You know, so I get rid of the bad guys, you know, if there's any like rogue cells that could turn cancerous. If you've got the right balance of microbes in your gut, they'll make sure that they don't turn cancerous. They'll get rid of them. And it's the same, as I say, with anything else, COVID as well. I mean, your immune system is there to keep you well, to fight off bacteria, viruses, to recognize threats in your body when something isn't right. You know, and again, to me, I look at it as like having a wee army in my gut, all doing their own wee jobs. You've got ones that are planting seeds. You've got ones that are the bouncers that are getting rid of the bad guys. You've got the wee guys all communicating with your immune system, telling your immune system when it's time to get the big guns out, here's a problem, or stand down. It's not a problem. It's only gluten or something. But these days, so many people have chronic problems. They don't understand or realize that a lot of the foods that they're eating are causing more problems for them. And
issues around the guts, that leaky guts that allow things out through the wall. And then those foods that get out into the bloodstream become an enemy, and they look very much so they get attacked.
Yes, that's right, Paul. But here's the cool thing. In your gut, if you have leaky gut, your gut lining's damaged. Your gut lining is a very thin layer of cells. If you have the right balance of microbes in your gut, you've got these butyrate-producing microbes. They produce butyrate, which is a short-chain fatty acid, which heals your gut lining. It will heal your gut lining. But if you don't have these guys in your gut producing this butyrate, your gut lining won't heal. A quick story just to tell you about the whole leaky gut thing. And again, there's been a massive influx of people that think, oh, I can't eat gluten. And again, why is gluten, you know, such an issue? And so many people switch from eating, you know, like normal bread, which they can't eat. They go and buy gluten-free stuff. Now, a lot of the gluten-free process, it's just full of emulsifiers, all sorts of crap. There's no nutrition in it. And what has come to light now is there are two emulsifiers that are used all the time in gluten-free foods, polysorbate 80 and carboxymethyl cellulose, and both of those emulsifiers have been scientifically proven in the lab to damage your gut. So if you have a damaged gut, honestly, if you have a damaged gut and you're eating gluten-free stuff with emulsifiers in it, that's going to further damage your gut. So there's
one
so
problem,
much stuff.
Solve one problem to create another, eh?
That's a
human response to something.
I know, but again, the thing is, Paul, people are not given the right information. You know, people think they're making a good choice. And okay, if you've got a problem with gluten, I've had so many people that have come along to my sourdough workshops said, oh, I can't eat gluten, I've got a real problem. And I'm like, that, well, okay, if you make sourdough, unless it's a wheat, if you're celiac and you have a real problem with wheat, then absolutely not. But the number of people that have come along that have tried sourdough and had absolutely zero digestive issues at all, because sourdough is slowly fermented, the bacteria break down a lot of the problem stuff, and it's a whole different thing. It's high in resistant starch, it's food for your gut bacteria. I know you make your own sourdough as well, Paul. It's a game changer to switch from supermarket bread. And if you look at a label in the supermarket, about 20 different things in it.
My sourdough game is a bit off at the moment. My sourdough game is definitely a bit off at the moment.
Oh, do you know what, though? It goes in fits and starts. And sometimes I feel, too, that, I mean, of November, I didn't really do that much myself. But you soon get back into the swing of it when the time's right. And to me, there's no joy more than making sourdough. I make mine in my Dutch oven with a lid on. So when you take it out of the oven and you lift the lid off and you've got a beautiful loaf, it's like one of life's simple pleasures is making and eating sourdough.
I need to be careful because I'm going to get geeked out. I need to be careful. This conversation, we're going in completely the wrong direction. Okay, so no, it's fine. I love this conversation, I love cooking and I love bread and I love making bread and sourdough, so I can really get into this. So look, I mean, I need to drag us back onto target a little bit. I know what success means to you. Success is obviously a kitchen full of bubbling stuff and people eating your food, but I mean, is there more to it than that?
Well, no, I think success to me is just actually feeling valued and getting, you know, and being recognised for the work that you do and being recognised for someone who, you know, knows what they're talking about, or someone who, you know, has knowledge. And I think for me, it's just that sort of feeling valued. And the thing is, I do feel valued because I continually get feedback from people about, oh, I feel so much better. Thanks for the advice. Thanks for showing me this. You know, and again, people, you know, resolve all sorts of health issues through just thinking a wee bit more about what they're eating and trying to get some of these loving foods into their life. So yeah, that to me would be success.
That clearly is. And your contribution to the world, no doubt, is changing the world.
Oh, well, I would love to get Scotland as a nation of fermenters, Paul. That's what I would love. Mm-hmm. I mean, seriously, we grow cabbages year round here. Scottish people love salt. Everyone's got a glass jar. Why are we not all making sauerkraut? I would love to be, honestly, and that, again, I have various friends who are doctors, you know, and GPs, and I've said, oh, wish I could get you to come in and show people how to make sauerkraut. So it's like, no, sorry, today, we're not handing out antibiotics today. We're having a sauerkraut workshop. You're going to go and learn how to make sauerkraut, which is going to improve your health in so many levels. And it's really easy, and it's cheap. Like,
is it a quick sauerkraut? It's just chopped cabbage, bit of salt.
I do a simple one. Usually what I'll do is, that's a bit plain for me. I've put some caraway seeds in, a couple of grated apples. But again, it's so simple. And it's
Is it water or you just put salt? No, water.
No, you just do salt. It's just salt. You have to massage the cabbage, which is actually great fun. It's quite mindful. You sprinkle your salt on the cabbage. You have to get the right, you need about 2% salt, so about the right level of salt. Weigh your cabbage, add 2% salt, massage it all. I've got a YouTube channel with exactly how to make it, Paul, all the steps, because people are concerned that they're not doing it right, or, you know, they're going to poison themselves. Nobody has ever died from eating fermented veggies. It is the safest way to preserve food.
But the idea of putting some apple in it, oh, I'm getting geeked again. You're doing this to me again, Janet.
Grated apples or a pear. A grated pear is very nice and sauerkraut. But see, when you make it yourself, Paul, you can do all sorts of variations on the theme. I make all sorts of different krauts. I do krauts with wild kraut, with fermented stuff in it, mugwort, nettle seeds, flowers. I did a dandelion and mustard one last spring, which was gorgeous with dandelion flowers in it. But you can do all sorts once you get the basics right. That's the fun of doing it yourself at home. You can put in what you like. You know, as you say, when you buy stuff that's processed, you know, that's it's all processed, it's pasteurized, and you've only got a limited choice.
Yeah.
When you do it yourself, you've got a massive choice. You can make whatever you like.
You can absolutely. Yeah, and use what's in season. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Well, I do all sorts of stuff. Yeah, so but to me, I'm a bit like you in that respect. Is I like to experiment with food.
Yeah.
So obviously, the contribution to the world, by the sounds of it, is changing the world by through fermentation. By the sounds of it.
Yeah, actually, to be honest, as well, Paul, it's actually getting people to understand that they have got control over their own health. And so many people don't get the link, or they think it doesn't matter what I do. The number of times I've been told, people with cancer, and I've been told it doesn't matter what you eat. It doesn't matter. You need to put weight on. Just go and eat donuts and cakes and drinks, sugary drinks. And it is just wrong on every level. So for me, it's actually getting people to understand that they can take back some power. They have power to change. I mean, we all have the power to decide what we're going to eat and what we're going to drink.
Yeah.
And when and it comes back to that,
unfortunately, the culture, or I mean, the world has got to the point where it's like we eat what we eat and then just go to the doctor to be fixed. We think that it's a bit like, you know, open the bonnet up and get me fixed. I can go back and do what I was doing before.
That's exactly right. But again, as I say, you know, the food industries, and as I say, I know a lot about food because I worked, you know, with various food companies. Food industry are not interested in your health. They want to sell you stuff. Right. So again, it's like you'll notice now there's a massive, free from in the supermarket. Free from. You could get a bag of sugar and put on it free from fat, free from cholesterol, free from what. And people think, oh, great, I'll buy that. Because that's the power of advertising. And real food and the powerful stuff, real food that is never advertised, because that's all your fruit, all your vegetables, all the whole grains, all the living foods, they're not advertised, because who's going to make money from them? Apart from the people.
I do what I want. I mean, I live up in the north of Scotland, and you live in Glasgow, but I mean, I do wander around the supermarket at times, around the veg section, and then go, what's new? What can I try? Because it's like doesn't seem a great deal of, you know. I don't know. It's true. I have this sense that if you go into the food markets in Europe, there's a lot more variety. And I'm just dreaming that there is.
No, you're not. That absolutely. That's one thing that I have so missed, as you've been able to go, because for when we go on holiday, that is the first thing we do is find the local market. And we go and check out everything. And that is the flavour that you get and the variety that you get. And the thing is, in most of the countries in Europe, they grow all their own. All the stuff is grown fairly locally. We import so much stuff, but we actually also grow a lot of stuff here as well. And again, I think there's been a big interest in people getting veg boxes. And if you do that, if you get a delivery with a veg box, you will get what's in season. So
yeah, but again, but it'll still be the same stuff. It'll still be carrots. It will still be, it will still be the things that we all recognize. It's these unusual foods that I like to see that are really different. I mean, the thing I tried this year was I had a bag of peas that were bag of pea seeds that were like, they're in my garage. I've been there for ages, and I thought to myself, I wonder if they'll sprout. So I just literally just chucked.
Oh yeah.
And they did. Wow. And the idea was I would like eat the pea sprouts. My God, they're amazing. Yeah. They're amazing.
They're so good.
Yeah, like, they just taste like peas. It's like, you know, it's a 3-inch piece of green that you stick on a salad. And we were fighting over them here. Like, there weren't that many of them.
But the thing is, that's a living food as well, because when you look at a seed has everything needed to grow into a huge plant. I used to do workshops for kids and show them like sunflower seeds. Right, you know the size of a massive sunflower. You look at the size of a sunflower seed, it's got everything required to grow into a massive sunflower. All it needs then is some sunshine, some water. And so all the seeds, when seeds sprout, all of that nutrition becomes bioavailable. Your body can use it. So sprouting anything is a fantastic idea, because it releases all of that nutrition. and your body can use it. In the same way that fermented foods are pre-digested, the bacteria have broken down a lot of the problem stuff.
So your body has work to do. That's quite clever.
The same with sprouts. And that's the thing, because a lot of foods that people eat are very difficult to digest. Mm-hmm. And also a lot of people don't realise that your body needs to use a lot of energy to digest food, especially if you're eating processed foods and lots of meat. And, you know, that takes a long time for your body to digest. Yeah, and if your health is not ideal, then what you should be doing is eating foods that are simple for your body to digest, so your body has more energy to do all the maintenance and repair stuff. And that's the thing, you know, that so many people don't understand, that they eat the same foods that cause inflammation. I mean, there are loads of foods that are great foods, but they don't suit everyone. When it comes back down to, this is not health and well-being. It's not a one-size-fits-all thing, and nor is diet. Because there are a lot of people that react really badly to the nightshades, which are tomatoes, potatoes, peppers, people with arthritis, a lot of people with skin conditions. Mm. These foods, much as they're really good foods, they actually continue to cause low-grade inflammation. And a lot of people are not aware of that. And they keep eating them and thinking, I don't feel great, or I've got brain fog, or my joints are a bit sore. And people don't relate it to what they're actually putting into their body in a daily basis. And again, people think, okay, some people are allergic to things like nuts and they'll have going to anaphylactic shock if they eat them. But there are so many foods that cause low-grade inflammation in people that can then, if you don't address it, then that can actually cause you a chronic health problem further down the line.
Wow, wow, so much. I mean, obviously, there's so much to discuss here, and yet we only obviously have to kind of curtail our conversation a little bit, otherwise. Yeah. As I said, I get geeked out again. So is there a question that I should have asked you that I didn't ask you?
Well, the question I do like to be asked all the time is, when people ask me a lot, does it actually matter what I eat? You know, can I do anything about my health? And people with all sorts of different conditions, and it's always like, yeah, absolutely. The one thing, though, that bothers me is people looking for someone else to give them the answer. We have something called our gut intuition. You have to sometimes think, okay, what feels right to me, and to find your own way. It's like your own personal jigsaw of bits. It's like nobody else knows what that is. Nobody else can tell you, you know, okay, people can give you some advice, but ultimately it has to come down to yourself. So I would say, as I say, I love when people ask me questions about, you know, foods, or is this food good or is that food? There's no such thing really, because we're all individual. Our gut microbes are our fingerprints, you know, but there are no two of us who are the same.
We're all a genetic experiment, aren't we? I mean, that's what we are, because, you know, we're a genetic experiment from our parents, and so I guess we're all different in that respect.
We are all different, and that's a really fascinating thing, because there are no two people will have the same balance of gut microbes. So that's really quite fascinating.
Okay, so I realised that You obviously, you know, prior to COVID, you were running workshops, this, that, and the other. So you've obviously had to change your pattern and what you do. And I know you've written a book or a couple of books that are available.
Yes.
You've been challenged for years to write a book and not going, but you finally put an ebook together for people.
Yeah. Well, I actually put two ebooks together this year. I did one which was called Good Mood Food for Families. And again, it's trying to get kids to eat better foods, but it's just all really healthy, delicious foods like fruit leathers and, you know, wheat jellies and different types of things that are good for everyone. And my one that I've done for now is called Celebration. So it's just in my life, food is a cause for celebration. It really is.
Yeah.
And good food, it's not just about it's Christmas, it's festive. Good food should be a celebration all times of the year. So I put together a really lovely wee book with some gift ideas in it. Because going to the shops is not fun anymore. So there's loads of lovely edible gift ideas, from chocolate to chutneys, even vegan dog biscuits in it. Lovely wee inspiring quotes and wee positive things just to uplift people. It's just been a year full of negative stuff. And again, there's loads of lovely recipes in it. They're all vegan, to be honest. They're all plant-based, but they're all absolutely delicious. So even if you're a meat eater, it doesn't mean you can't try something different.
And those are on your website?
And they're not on my website, actually. I've got them on, I've shared both of them on my Instagram and Facebook page.
Okay, so the link for those, those books are available to buy. They're not free books. They are.
They're not free books. They're actually £10 to download. Yeah, because I see what I've done. I had to cancel all my workshops this year.
Yeah, of course.
And I do actually get, I share loads of stuff for free. There's loads of recipes. You can subscribe to my blog and I share recipes and all sorts of things. But as I say, this was...
I know the level of skill you have, and I know what your recipes are like, and I've tried a few of them. These books are well worth the money of the investment. So do check out. The links will be in the show notes above, and the links will also be at Life, Passion and Business and everywhere else. So do check out the links of those books, because I think... you'll be amazed if you start cooking from these recipes.
Yeah, absolutely. It introduces a whole new world of flavors. It really does.
So your Instagram page, where is that one? What will they have?
Oh, it's called, I'm on Instagram. It's Be Nourished by Nature. So it's just Be Nourished by Nature. I have a Facebook page called Nourished by Nature UK, and I have a blog called Blog Nourished by Nature. That's the three. I don't actually have a website. I have a blog instead, because I started doing all of this really just kind of part-time, and it's just kind of snowballed a wee bit, and then it's totally stalled because of COVID. So
it's all good. People can reach out to you. They'll find you. So look, Janice, thank you so much for this. It's been lovely to have a conversation with you. But now we get to that big question, the one question that as humans we all have to come up with an answer to. What is the meaning of life for you?
For me, I think it's just about enjoying simple pleasures, Paul. It really is. It's about getting back to basics. It's about enjoying nature. It's about being kind. It's about, just enjoying life. But for me, as I say, I'm really quite old fashioned, and I don't really, I don't strive for loads of things. I just want to enjoy my life, to tread lightly on the planet, to appreciate nature, to look after the body that I've been given, to the best of my ability, and to just communicate and share, with people. So for me, life is just simple. I'm a simple person. Well, not simple in terms of, but I don't really have any great ambitions to do things. I have an old camper van, which sadly went on fire this year. So just getting away and getting away for an adventure, to go and enjoy the beautiful scenery. You're so lucky that you live up north. Well, we're a bit obviously in Glasgow, but just enjoying simple things. And as I get older, I'm going to be 60 next week, which I'm actually going to cancel because this year hasn't counted. So I'm just going to stay 59 because I can't even go anywhere. So it's just being able to enjoy. And again, health is at the root of everything for me, Paul. Yeah. Is that if you don't have good health, then everything else is not, you can't enjoy it to the same level.
No,
so I'm incredibly fortunate, as I say, that I've, I am where I am. And again, it's a continual thing because no one knows what tomorrow brings. So it's just to be present, enjoy, and be grateful for where you're at. And don't ever accept if someone tells you something, if you're told something, doctor, medical, whatever else, and told there's nothing you can do, don't believe them.
Well, Janice Klein, thank you so much for your time today. It has been a pleasure to talk to you. I really thoroughly enjoyed our conversation. Thank you.
Yeah, great to talk to you, Paul.
And that was Life, Passion and Business with Paul Harvey and my guest, Janice Klein. So do check out the Celebration Cookbook. You can find the links in the show notes or at the website. You can also find Janice at the website www.blognourishedbynature.com. Details in the show notes. She's on Facebook, Nourished by Nature UK, and on Instagram, Be Nourished by Nature. So that is it for this week. Next week's show is about play. As adults, do we get to play enough? Great subject so close to Christmas. In the meantime, if you would like to explore the five questions from your own perspective, do check out the five questions workbook. The link is in the show notes, or you can find it at lifepassionandbusiness.com underneath the publications tab. There's a couple of other books there too, which are quite valuable. So that is it for this week. As always, thank you for your time and attention, and I will catch you later. All the best.